And what I thought we'd do is focus on, well, it's not really death meditations, but it's reversing death as an energy. And so the first thing to, I'll give a bit of theory to understand the first meditation. And that is, I mean, what have you died for in other lives? It's all stored in your soul records, particularly, I mean, in your ego, in your astral body, in the Akashic records, in the spiritual world. Every single death experience you've ever had. And, I mean, we could break it down, categorize it in a very simplistic way as physical causes of death based on how you, your relationship with your physical body, causes of death or reasons to die because of your etheric body, how you interact with that, reasons to die because of your connection to your astral body, and then reasons that are in your mental body. So we need to clear all those so that you can have the next or the highest, well, relatively higher level of reason to die. And what? Why would you die if you, you know, could, if you made a sacrifice, a sacrificial death, you know, if you said, yes, I will die for that, you know, like you're a, you know, you're making a sacrifice, aren't you? What would you die for? Question.
My children?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and you'll understand that, that there is a relevance to this. What you should die for is to gain your higher self, ideally. Because when you die, your lower self dies, and you join an eternal, immortal part of you, your higher self. So that should ultimately be the kind of highest reason to die. There is a kind of higher, higher levels of higher self, so it's all a continuum. Once you've done that ego death, that's what we would say is an ego death, a death of the lower ego. And that's the crucifixion of the lower ego. Then you can make the other death, which is the death for someone else. The death for someone else's higher self to come down on behalf of them. I would suggest don't die for your children or for a loved one until you've made your own death to your higher self. Otherwise, it's the wrong kind of conditional martyrdom, where you may die for someone else out of love or guilt. I mean, you don't really want to die for someone out of that, or to rescue them. You first die for yourself. That may not make sense until we do the meditations. But then when you do make a death for someone else, that's what everyone has to do at some point. That activates the next level of energy in your higher self, and that is the Christic codes, where the energy of your higher self, there's a part of your higher self that recognizes the higher self of others and lives in that community of higher selves. And that's what that death is to someone else. All right. Now, once you've activated that ego death, summarizing, what we're going to do is activate a sense of dying, your lower self dying to gain your higher self. Then what we can do is work through and clear past life memories in your physical body where you had died because of your physical body. Is that the reason to die, really? What? Why would you die because of your physical body? Obviously.
Illness.
Because of illness. Because you damaged your physical body. You've not respected it, you've not preserved it, you've not, you know, provided health, and you haven't cleared the genetic inheritance in the physical body. So that's the wrong reason to die, because that imprint carries over to the next or subsequent physical bodies. So once you've done the ego death, you can then rewrite those death codes in your physical body. Again, don't worry, it's theory right now, but it'll feel something will happen. And you won't know how to write it down or describe it. And then the etheric death, effectively, that I would say is where you've used your energy inappropriately. And that's what a lot of people do when they're in the wrong place at the wrong time, doing the wrong thing, in the wrong relationship, in the wrong job, and they go into a kind of staleness in their energy that is in their etheric body. It creates a melancholy, a depression, and then you just die. You know, it's a slow death or a rapid death, doesn't matter whether you die because of an accident or you just have a slow death. From this midlife crisis onwards. So you clear that as well out of your etheric body, all the memories of dying like that. And then you can clear the memories of dying in your astral body, your emotional body, where you died because of an emotional reason. And that could be through anger, fear, hate, you know, shock, something, or passion. You know, some kind of, because a lot of people might, do something out of fear, and that leads to death. But it's all stored in the astral body. Mental death, death because of something in your mind, so you can clear that, is say death through a principle, a thought. Like people might die for an idea, in a kind of revolution, or for a principle, and they stick by it, or because of a religious war or something. And that's not the highest form of death either, because that thought form, eventually, even if it sounds positive, will carry over into future lives, and you have to clear that thought. You died because of that thought, and eventually you have to release that thought form because it becomes a negative thought form that keeps destroying you. So let's try that and see where it takes you. I'll guide you through a visual image. In fact, the image to have probably is the cross, like the cross of crucifixion. So imagine that you're seated in the chair in a bubble of light. And this is the only moment that counts. Let go of your journey here and the day. And then this meditation is forging a new, higher relationship between yourself and everything else. That you are your higher self and everything else that is your vehicles, your bodies. So imagine the concept of ego, of self, your identity. And imagine that your self or your ego lives in two places, here on earth and up in the spiritual world. And then imagine your lower ego, lower self, sees in front of it a cross, the cross of crucifixion. And in the next few minutes, take your time. Imagine placing yourself on that cross of matter and allowing your lower ego to die through a crucifixion to join your higher ego again. cross is now in your heart, and your lower ego is in your heart making that sacrifice of death. And now, keeping that energy that you're in, put your focus on your physical body overall, and imagine in your physical body is stored all the memories of dying because of some physical disease or physical ailment, or simply through not taking care of your physical body in other lives. Ask now, project now, because of your higher perspective of true death, to flush out of your physical body, cleanse out of it all memories of this kind of lower death, dying because of the physical body being damaged. So from now on, death is not due to the physical body. Death will be due to when your higher self calls you. You have an energy field, your etheric energy body, and in there are stored any memories of other lives where you died simply by not using your energy on the right path, not being on the right path at the right time, doing the right things, hence moving your energy into dead end paths. Ask with this higher ego death now that you have to clear all memories of dead end paths in your etheric body. Then imagine your astral or emotional body, emotions, ask to clear all past life memories of death or other lives, future lives as well, where you die because of some emotional force, usually negative, but can be positive. Again, death is from your higher self, not from your emotional life. Finally, imagine your mental body. Maybe just imagine a yellow light all around you. And ask to clear all other lives where you died because of a thought form, because of some belief system or idea or principle. Visualize again that cross in your heart as you come out. Of life. Any feedback?
I didn't find it easy to die.
You didn't?
Some of the bodies didn't find it easy to die. Physical was easy to get let go of.
Or to release the memories, you mean?
Memories and
What spirit of the river, I'm seeing like ghostly faces coming forward and going. It's quite strange.
Okay, good. Well, don't worry, it's a staging process. Each time you remember, activate an energy, it releases stuff. In a kind of stage, so the meditation just goes deeper the next time you do it. even if you didn't do it again, between, you know, for two, three, few days, when you do it again, it will have gone deeper. Anyone else?
With the physical death, I think it made the heart feel more expansive than free clutter.
Yeah. Well, I said there's a lot, you know, that you'll understand over time, which I can't tell you because we haven't got time. So, moving on, let's go on to where you died for someone else, because you've died for your higher self in this one. Now, that someone else, of course, could be an intimate person, a relationship, a child, husband, wife, whatever, partner, or someone you don't know, you know, where you could just create a kind of concept. And likely, you see, well, it definitely, it'll have to happen at some level in the future. You know, what you can achieve in this lifetime is limited to what you will achieve in future lives of that kind of death for another. And it's quite emulated by the twins, Castor and Pollux. You know the story?
Mm-hmm.
Castor and Pollux in Greek mythology. Yeah. I always forget. I think Pollux is the mortal one. I'll have to check again. But one is immortal, one is mortal. Because they're twins, but one is born from a god, and the other is born from a human male father, I mean. They're both from a human mother. So, but they're inseparable, they do everything together. The mortal one dies in some battle, and the immortal one, he asks the gods to give up his immortality in order to join his brother in the afterlife. He wants to go and join his brother. But him sacrificing his eternal life brings a new life to his brother in the afterlife. And that's what you all will have to do. I mean, there's Greek mythology is a big one where it gets it, because there's a particular reason why they had to start the easy initiations. Another example is Orpheus, who goes to rescue Eurydice, his dead wife, in Hades, in the afterlife. He doesn't die to get down there. He plays music and he gets down there, and he brings her back nearly to resurrection. So there's all these stories, and similarly, you will come across a situation in future lives where you are willing to sacrifice your ego for someone else's resurrection. Because the most valuable thing you have is your ego. And I don't think you quite understand what that kind of sacrifice really is yet. It's where you sacrifice your own, in a way, you sacrifice your own enlightenment, your own resurrection, your own destiny. It's not just a life. You sacrifice all your lives for one person. Would you be willing to do that?
And what would happen to you? You kind of just disappear, or do you...
If it's the wrong sacrifice to the wrong person, if it's a conditional sacrifice, then you will be trapped in their journey, in their biography, constantly going, trying to rescue them. You'll be karmically looped with them until finally you learn to separate from that person. It'll be like a codependency.
Mm-hmm.
But if you do it in the right way, to the right person, in the right situation, you can't just say, oh, I want to do that, and someone turns up. It's got to, you know, spirit decides. Then what will happen is you rewrite all your lives. You have the opportunity to clear your karmic biography across all your lives, because you said, well, I've sacrificed it all. So you've surrendered and gone at the next level. So it's a big thing to do, you know. You can't just say, I'll sacrifice and die for my children, because that actually may not be the right person.
Mm.
You know, you love your children, you want to raise them, but to die for them could mean that they are karmically indebted to you. And that they and you are trapped with each other into future lives. You know. So don't just say you'll sacrifice for someone because you love them. Anyway, let's see if you can sense what that means, that energy. You don't have anyone that you'd sacrifice yourself to like that. Just make up a concept of a person that you'll meet in that way in a future life. So you've just been prepared for it. So again, visualize you're in a bubble of light. Notice, though, that the cross is still in your chest, in your heart, and you are still on that cross, dying. Your lower self is dying to gain your higher self. But imagine now, at that place of Golgotha, the place where Jesus Christ was crucified, and on each side was another man being crucified. They happened to be thieves, but no matter. Imagine now that you are making that sacrifice, you are dying in order to save another soul, to bring in a resurrection the higher self of another soul down to earth. Just create that intention in your mind and ask to be ready for that sacrifice when it arrives, when Spirit gives you that initiation. A sense as this happens, you are being shown how to truly commune with another ego, to see the destiny of another soul. Out. Imagine your heart is surrounded by a new golden light. sanctity of life again. You never reach the bottom of the cup. Any feedback? It helps me because I don't know what's happening.
I saw myself as sort of like a huge boat, maybe like 1,000 people, maybe more. And I made that sacrifice, but it felt like the right sacrifice, and it was completely selfless. There wasn't a thought. You just did it. It felt like that.
Yeah. Good. I mean, that's the kind of vibe, you know, that obviously that's good, because you realise that the kind of death that you're talking about, you see, if you die for someone else where you are doing it because of a selfish reason, like you want them to owe you in future lives, I mean, that's where yourself is, you know, not really being selfless, but you're realizing the selflessness of that kind of higher form of dying for someone else. They don't owe you anything, whoever they are. A spirit who therefore blesses you. All right, shall we go on to the next one? Now what I like to do is a preparation meditation for the one after this. So I'll give you the theory of both. Some of you know how many heartbeats, or easier to say, how many breaths do you have in a day? Right. How many breaths you have in a minute is 18 on average, let's say. And in an hour, 18 times 60, that's whatever that number is, the breaths in an hour. Then if you do over 24 hours, 18 times 60 times 24 is 25,920. What's special about that number, more or less? Some people say it's about 26,000.
Is it the distance between?
Distance and moon.
No. That's about that's over 350,000 miles. Now, 25,920 is about that is the number of years it takes for one great cycle of the spin, the rotation of the Earth's axis. If you imagine the globe, the Earth, okay, spinning. It's spinning once in 24 hours, of course, and it's moving around the Sun. But also the Earth, you know, that spin that it has once in 24 hours. So there's this axis, which is, of course, a north to south pole axis, and it's spinning on its top. But that spin has a slight wobble, which I'm exaggerating. Like a yo-yo, when it's near the end of its spin, it's wobbling. So effectively, the Earth, if you follow the line of the North Pole into space, you get a point in space called the North Pole in space, which is called the North Celestial Pole. So the Earth is pointing to that North Pole. The North Pole is pointing to that. If you're at the North Pole, you would see that point in the sky, all the stars are going around it. Okay. We describe the nearest bright star to that point in space, and we call that our pole star. And it appears all the stars are going around the pole star. Anyway, because of this yo-yo thing, that means it takes a certain length of time for the Earth's North Pole pointing to a particular point in space to describe a big circle in the space and go return back to it, any point you're starting from. That takes about 26,000 years, that wobble of the Earth's axis of spin. Do you get what I'm talking about? Yeah.
And is it the pole star? Do you mean the northern star?
Sorry?
Is it the northern star?
The pole star, Polaris, we call Michael the Northern Star, yes, depends on. But that will therefore change because whatever point in space our pole, North Pole, is pointing to, we'll choose a different star in a thousand years from now, and it'll be Vega, and it'll be, it used to be other stars in the past, in Draco, and so on. The point is, the Earth has therefore a relationship with the cosmos.
Mm.
Okay, an orbital relationship in this way of over 26,000 years. We divide that by 12, and that gives us 2,160, as it happens. 25,000 divided by 9 and 20 divided by 12. And that is what we call the age, a particular zodiacal age. So we're now near the end of age of Pisces, about 300 odd years left. We're going to re-enter, as you know, the age of Aquarius. It goes backwards. So age of Aries before Pisces was the Greek age. Age of Taurus was the Egyptian age, and so on and so forth. The point is that with every 2,160 period age, the culture changes, the human race, the civilization, our lessons change. So you are incarnating on Earth at moments when your destiny is suited to the situation on Earth, the cultural lessons. Okay? And therefore, now if we look at why, therefore, do you have the same number of breaths in a day as the length of the great year of the Earth's spin, axis spin with the cosmos, and your heart beats in health, when you're healthy, I mean, in unhealth you lose the rhythm, the heart beats four times for every breath. So that means your heart has also got a ratio. It's only four times, but that's fine. It's the same fractal with the Earth's relationship with the cosmos. It all boils down to one principle. You incarnate, and finally, the other principle, I should say, is, as alternative medicine says, Ayurvedic and Chinese medicine, you are born with a defined number of breaths and a defined number of heartbeats. You use that up, you die. Western medicine has distorted that a lot with pacemakers and allopathic medicine and extending people's lives. But that aside, in natural death, that's your allocated number of heartbeats. If you, because when you've used up your last heartbeat, the spiritual world calls you back. If you try to extend your life, that's an artificial life where there's no purpose and no destiny. The cosmos stops communicating to you on Earth, because you're on kind of extended heartbeats and breaths that are meaningless to the soul. They're only of meaning because the physical body wanted to keep going, because the person was too fixated on their physical body. So in this, in the meditation, I want you to kind of realign the number of heartbeats, your heartbeats overall, to the cosmos. And that will kind of change your awareness of how meaningful your incarnation is and why you incarnate at certain times, and it will waken you up at this level of your soul which is conscious of when you incarnate, when you die, and what, and when you incarnate again, and, you know, looking at the kind of timeline of your lives. But before we do that meditation, we need to do another meditation to prepare you for that. And sorry, it's all a bit too much theory this time, because it is. But anyway, what element do you think your heart relates to?
Fire.
Fire. And in astrology, there are three fire signs. There are three earth signs, water signs, air signs. The three fire signs are Sagittarius, Leo, and Aries. Sagittarius is symbolized by what? The centaur, which is half, lower half is a horse, upper half is human. The centaur principle, the Sagittarian principle, esoterically means that you are always trying to control your lower half, which is animalistic. And the animal nature in the lower half of your body is full of lust, desire, you know, earthly nature. As you control that, then you become the wise centaur, who is Chiron in Greek mythology, who has wisdom and has completely controlled his lower animal nature. Okay, so you create that energy into your Sagittarius, your lower half, you activate complete control over the animal nature and activate Chiron. And briefly, Chiron always wanted to die after he got injured by Hercules accidentally. He craved death, craved return to the spiritual world. There's a meaning to that. Then you activate the Leo state in your heart, and the next stage of Leo is where you make your heart a home for your soul, and your heart, you imagine, is a palace, and there's a throne for your higher self, because Leo is the king. So you are activating the king energy of your soul, as you, as a leader, you know, as a master, not of others, of yourself. And where you have mastery over yourself, but not in order to gain domination over anyone else. You see, that's higher Leo forces, where you are of service. Then you ask to activate the higher level of Aries. Now, Aries is usually things like impulsiveness, rashness, you know, intent, willpower. But here you ask to surrender your will to higher will. And that is typified by, you know, the sacrifice, the higher will, you know, not your will, but thy will be done in the kind of prayer. And there your Aries becomes the next principle, where a fire ignites in your head, as it were, to spirit. Once you've created the three levels of Sagittarius, Leo, Aries, then we can do that meditation about the rhythms. You'll know why after you've done it. Okay, so again, imagining your bubble of light. So straight away, imagine going into the lower half of your body, and that in your lower half, ask to become aware and activate the Sagittarian initiation. You as Sagittarius, where you ask to be shown whether you have mastered and controlled the animal nature that is in the lower half of your body. Visualize an animal there, could be a horse, but could be anything else, and sense whether that animal is unruly, wild, frenzied in any way, or completely under your control. Ask to activate the Chiron within you, where you can use the wisdom in the human upper half of your body to control the animal in the lower half. As if you're riding a horse. And imagine, while that's happening and continuing on, your heart asks to activate the next level of Leo, the initiation of Leo in your heart, the cosmic lion. And imagine your heart is a palace with a throne to seat your soul as a king or a queen. Imagining though that majesty and that glory is a quiet glory, one that you can keep to yourself with humility as well. And going to your head, particularly just the upper surface of your head, your skull. Ask to activate the next level of Aries. And imagine your will, your whole destiny and purpose is sent vertically upwards. You surrender your will and your purpose in life to your higher self. Not your will, but thy will be done. You can imagine it as in messages are from vertically above. And now imagine, back in your heart, that there's some kind of a clock with a memory. And in there are stored the number of heartbeats you are going to have in this incarnation. A very specific number, which you don't need to get a number, but just imagine. The pacemaker stores that number. Create an intention. Affirm that you want to now completely synchronize the pacemaker in your heart to the rhythm of the Earth's axis of rotation with the cosmos. And a good way to visualize this is imagine your when you die that you will leave your heart and at the same time look at where the North Pole is pointing into space with your soul. stabilize that energy by imagining an image of a bowl, which is the Holy Grail, but the bowl in your heart, or a chalice cup as you come out. Stretch this tea into the whole hour. Any feedback? We better get going with the last one then. What time is it?
We've got about 10 minutes.
Oh, all right. So, any feedback then?
I found that quite difficult to do.
They're very conceptual, aren't they?
Yes, the last sort of thing, there was a lot more fire in here than this time. It was just the first two were right, the last one was really focused.
Okay, well, if you can, do them at home as well. I personally won't bother, but you know, you can. After a while, you kind of just do them, don't you? Don't keep just doing them. But anyway, have a go and see what happens. Let's go on to the next one. And when did death originally get programmed into the human race? Why did we have death? When did it start?
Before.
Yeah, in the middle of Lemuria. As we fell for the first time into our bodies. Now, for some of you who haven't been to my classes, which are so what happens is we fell into our bodies for the first time at an earlier stage of the human race. Before then, we were living in the Garden of Eden, and there was eternal life. There was no need to die. Well, you didn't have a concept of being in a body anyway. You were in a light body, in a spiritual form. So there was no need to die. And so death needed to be activated in order to return back to the spiritual world from the physical body you're in, like a mechanism. But what happened is, of course, Adam and Eve, in the story of Genesis anyway, there's different versions here or there, but they ate the fruit of the tree of knowledge and so on and so forth. So then Jehovah says, from now on you will suffer and you will experience pain and death and disease. And of course, what was the response of Adam and Eve? They're desolate, you know, they're kind of despairing and completely, you know, gutted and sad for this state. So they've now internalized death. So what we're going to do is change that story, because that's a story embedded into every human. By imagining, because we're not going to reverse death just like that. We're going to reach the next level though first. And that is, you imagine changing the story such that Jehovah or the gods, the elders, the creator gods, did not put death into your heart. They didn't put it such that your heart would stop at a certain number of heartbeats. They didn't do it, you did it. Imagine you willingly and chose to descend from the Garden of Eden into your body and bring death into your body with you. That means you own the energy of death. You're not then blaming, you know, the gods or the spiritual world. And once you own death, then you can go to the next level and reverse death and go into immortality. You can't go straight into the resurrection until you first fully embrace and fully own the energy of death within you and not blame anything else for it. Because that reverses that sense of despair that is buried in the soul. Because then you face death with joy, because you fully accept it, don't you? Let's see what you feel from that. So again, in your bubble of light. This time, imagine there's a relationship between you and the spiritual world, which is a constant repetition of that Garden of Eden story. And imagine somewhere stored is that program of death in your body, in your heart, in your energy. A death program put in there by the gods. You can imagine it like a black shadow somewhere in your heart. But now project an intention, a message up to the gods, the creator gods, that you yourself chose to put that death energy into your heart, and you put it in yourself to fully embrace that decision as yours with joy and acceptance. Sense now that a new energy is starting to radiate from your heart into the world, and that is that you are becoming a light for others. The light of resurrection is not just for you, but to radiate into the world. Imagine as you fully embrace that death energy as yours, you're also receiving the blueprints of eternal life as yours. But so you can show others. Imagine that when you go to sleep tonight or some night soon, you will return to the Garden of Eden in your dreams to complete some of the healing initiation of this session that needs to be completed during sleep state. Come back.